Welcome to Reboot Republic, the podcast that goes behind the headlines and looks at the big issues in this republic of inequality. We are the podcast of solutions and the podcast of hope. We cover the big issues. Today, we are covering the issue of childcare and early years education, which is an absolutely massive issue for so many people, for parents, but also for the workers themselves. And I think one of the things that really has come true during this pandemic is that the importance of childcare and early years sector as frontline workers to enable the economy, society to keep going. And today I'm joined on Reboot Republic by Orla O'Connor from the National Women's Council of Ireland, by Tanya Ward from the Children's Rights Alliance, by Dara O'Connor from SIPTU and organizer of the Big Start campaign, and by Lynette Monk, who is an educator from Kilbarrack in Dublin. And we're delighted to have everyone on board. And just before we start, we'd like to put out the call, as we do, become a patron, support us. These podcasts are bringing you the frontline experts, activists, people engaged in trying to address issues in Ireland and abroad. And we really need support to keep going. So become a patron, go on to Tortoise Shack, patreon.com/tortoiseshack, and become a patron of Reboot Republic. Orla O'Connor, I'll go to you first. The budget was quite shocking. I know we talked about this, but it is worth reiterating, I think, and maybe you could update if anything has changed since then, for the lack of attention and really funding that was put into the childcare and early year sector, given, again, as what I said, its central importance, and given that parents like myself are shelving out $1,500 a month on childcare, and you know, workers have been paid the minimum wage, you know, there's something deeply wrong with this system. But yet, the budget seemed an opportunity to do something, but it was missed.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there is a fundamental crisis in childcare, and the fact that it was completely not seen as being a needed to be a critical part of the budget, and the fact that that was totally absent. Now, we know why it was absent, because the minister is carrying out this consultation process. And I think, you know, for the Women's Council, for our members, for women, we're absolutely sick and tired of being consulted about childcare. We know we need it to be affordable. We want it to be public. And we want those who are working in it, who are predominantly women, to be on proper salaries and in proper working conditions. And what's missing is leadership on that and the investment that's needed to provide that. Because, you know, this is such a central issue for women's equality, because without it, women cannot participate properly in society. And also, we know it's a critical piece in terms of child welfare and children's development. So there's a number of pieces. But at the moment, the bit that's missing is that sort of vision and leadership in terms of moving forward for that public system. And it needs to be public, because one of the elements that's causing this crisis is the fact that it is built on a system by, you know, full combination of for-profit, not-for-profit, for community providers, and there's been no, I suppose, coherence to it. So what you end up is exactly what you've said, these, you know, really high rates where people are having to pay, and also in many areas, it's just not available, whether that's out of school are also early years in some parts. And I think one of the things, though, that we are in a different place now after COVID, well, even in COVID, but particularly, I suppose, after the really extensive lockdown, because people have seen what an important public service childcare is. And I think that's really important. And it's really good we're having this discussion today, because just at the weekend, the Citizens Assembly on Care met. And it was really interesting that the citizens who were part of that were all talking about childcare, and they were talking about the need for a public childcare. So I think there's been a really important shift here in terms of how people are seeing childcare, and they want it to be that public service that is essential.
And do you think there is still a problem like this? You know, particularly as a father, you know, I feel this and see this, that, you know, it is seen as such, you know, this women, like this women's issue, rather than been seen as one of all parents, and that, you know, of society, like, does it reflect we're still this deeply patriarchal society, or is it, you know, what's wrong here?
Well, I think there's two things with that. I think, yeah, absolutely, particularly in Ireland, in comparison to other countries, women are still predominant carers right across the board, whether that's in unpaid care work or whether that's in paid work. So absolutely, you're right to call it out, because that's what it is. It is a reflection of the patriarchal society. But also it is a women's issue, because without it, it impacts on women. And you can see that, for example, in families that have more than two children, there is no significant difference in terms of the participation of men in terms of different, you know, whether it's employment, whether it's other areas in society, but there is in relation to women. So it is a women's issue. But yes, it needs to be dealt with at a societal level, because it absolutely impacts. It impacts on the whole of society. And probably that is one of the things I think that's caused this shift in terms of how it's seen now, because we've seen what a problem it is for everyone, and it's taken away, which is what the experience in COVID was.
Yeah, thanks, Orla O'Connor. No, I think you're absolutely right around that. And it is something that, you know, again, I think we really need to have this conversation about, you know, what fundamental role, kind of, you've mentioned this before, caring plays in society and how we value it and don't value it. And I think part of that is really challenging this notion that, you know, these gendered roles and patriarchy and that, I think, is central within it. And we've a distance to go, clearly, in Ireland still. Tanya Ward from the Children's Rights Alliance, in terms of your perspective, why do you think that this idea of, you know, a public childcare system really addressing this properly, the child care in early years, is an issue? And I know, particular in terms of, you know, children from poor backgrounds, children in vulnerable situations, this is even more important that this sector is supported and funded and we do this right.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I suppose we're way behind, alongside the UK, we're way behind a lot of other European countries, because they start developing a public childcare system in their countries in the 1940s and 50s. And I think probably in Ireland, we're really only starting to pay attention to the rights and experiences of young children in the last 10 years. So like women who've just been ignored and expected just to carry the burden of care in their families, small children have been ignored as well, essentially. Mm. And that's despite the fact that you go through the most important stage of your growth and development between from before you're born all the way to the age of six. And I suppose, you know, for us, what's really striking is at the moment, you know, children can't be guaranteed the same quality childcare from one end of the country to the next. And the challenge there is, if you like, you know, harmful childcare is more harmful to children than no childcare.
Yeah.
And that's a big issue for us. But from an inequality point of view, you know, what if you look at the big studies that have been done on inequalities, and they found that they can predict whether a child at the age of three, based on their social and emotional skills, they can predict if they'll go to university or not. Now, that is shocking. It's shocking to hear that the inequality is locked in from very early stages. But that also tells you, if you had the right system in place and the right early years education in place, that you would be able to level out and give every child in the country an opportunity to reach their full potential. So there's a real issue there, I suppose. The other thing I think in Ireland is, you know, most people, when they think of childcare, they think it's just somewhere to dump your child. And they also think that while you're in school, and they also don't want to pay for it.
Dara O'Connor from SIP2 and the Big Start campaign, and also a fellow dad as well, who's facing these challenges now, new dad, well, not so new now. How old is the child again now, Dara?
He's just gone one.
Just so gone one.
It feels like a lifetime ago.
that it does.
In the best possible way.
In the best possible way. Absolutely. Exactly. But and it's, you know, it's a reality that is facing, you know, young parents. Parents of young kids. I won't call you a young parent like myself, an old fella. on the kind of, I suppose, the Big Start campaign, what you've done, you know, what are the issues that you kind of see are on a day-to-day level are happening in the sector that need to be changed, rather than just kind of, would say, at a policy level, but actually on a day-to-day level in childcare systems in early years? Like, what's the state of the system out there?
So definitely there's been a lot of change and a lot of positive change over the last 10 years, but we are still have a long, long way to go to get anything that resembles kind of a European style kind of public provision that delivers on affordability and delivers, you know, on quality, and you know, where you have decent jobs for the staff. And it kind of links back to what Tanya was saying, that high quality early years has a really positive impact on children's lives and their outcomes, and poor quality has a negative impact. And you got to look, and then, I mean, really conscious of this when we're trying to sort out childcare for our own kid as well. You got to, and unfortunately, I know the background to it and all the policy maneuvers and what's happening on the ground, and that we have an incredibly high staff turnover rate in Ireland.
Yeah.
So it's around 40% in full daycare services. That's eye-wateringly high.
Yeah.
So, but why is that important? And it's because, you know, Lynette will tell us that it's quality comes from those interactions between the worker who's well-trained and who's doing their CPD and has a good grounding and good skills, and that's the interactions that they have with the kid. But if there's a constant churn in staff, if people aren't staying in the sector because the pay is low and it's below the living wage for the majority of people, if workers don't see a career path, if you're coming out and the vast majority of people can't make ends meet, they don't have a pension, what workers say to me is that they're putting their life on hold. Right? Mm. They can't get a mortgage. They can't start a family. And it becomes a kind of precarious, high turnover, almost temporary job, unless you're able to kind of move into kind of the management roles, which aren't well paid, but are a little bit better paid than the rest of the staff. And so that's a real problem. That's a big problem for the workers who are there, who we've asked to train up and get their qualifications and get their degrees. They've been sold short. It's really bad for children because it's undermining quality. And it's really bad for society just in general, right? We're not getting the kind of the outcomes that we want from it. So it really is, you know, we need to, for lots of different reasons, we need to invest more because we are underinvesting as a country into it. And then we got to make sure that money is being spent effectively, that it's delivering for us. It's raising the standards, raising the quality, making good careers. And then, you know, just as importantly, it's making it affordable for the parents.
Yeah. And I think it's something that is really fundamental and you raised there. And I think that needs to be, you know, I think talked about a lot more and thought about. And I know those in the sector and those who research the area, you know it of what you've pinpointed there. And I have had it myself in terms of experience that, you know, when a child is 2 or 3 years of age, or even younger, do you know what I mean? You know, 1 or 8 months and it's going into a childcare setting, that the bond it develops with the childcare, you know, provider at that point is massively strong. Like they are their parent substitute for that period of time. And if that person then moves off in 3 months' time or 6 months' time or even a year's time, like I was, you know, my own kids like 3 or 4 or 5 years of age, you know, they want the same person there. And they go, where's that person gone? You know, they were like my best buddy in you know, in creche or after school. And they're actually upset by it. You know, it upsets the children. And, you know, those connections are really important. And they're actually even more important for people, for example, who are homeless or who are in vulnerable situations. You know, having stability of relationships within childcare settings really, really matter in early years. And then, of course, you're right that why we have to ask, why is that turnover happening? It is because of the poor conditions of the workers and why that's so essential as well. And maybe to bring Lynette there in terms of the, you know, actual frontline work, maybe you could explain what your own role is, what you're doing and what your sense of this is.
I'm managing a community-based preschool in the Kilbarrick area. I have 3 preschool rooms and we would have 13 staff here in the preschool, and we are caring for over 100 children from the locality. In what regard then would you like me to, sorry.
Well, I think there's, you know, for you as a kind of seeing the, you know, the frontline impact of this, like, first of all, you know, even that, like the relationship that, you know, the staff have with the kids, you know, and how important that is and what you see around that.
Yeah, well, our motto here in our preschool would be to be, to belong and to become. And like to be, you know, that's looking at the child, taking that child at heart, looking at their interests, looking at their needs, and catering for those on a day-to-day basis here in the childcare centre. Then like when we talk about the child belonging, they need to have a sense of ownership, a sense of community, a sense of security. And that sense of security comes from having consistent staff day by day here with them, knowing the people that they're coming into, knowing the people that are caring for them, meeting that same person at the door every morning, saying goodbye to that person every day as they're going home. That consistency needs to be there to, for that child to have a sense of security and a sense of belonging. And then for that child to become, that child needs, you know, us there to bridge their learning. They need us to have a knowledge of themselves. They need us to be able to see what they can do and where they can go and to help them along the way. But it's not only just the view of the children in a vacuum. We also need to think about the families. So where does that family come from? You know, what's the social background?
Yeah.
And what are the emotional issues that the child and the family are bringing to the service? And then it's on a day to day, we are dealing with all of that. So, you know, it isn't just a childcare service. It's a family service that we're providing.
And, you know, that obviously requires, as you say, you know, staff who are trained, who have, you know, the qualifications, who have, you know, the length of time to, you know, be able to do that and build that up. And how do you find, you know, the sector is dealing with that? You know, how is it, you know, as Dara saying, turnover is a big problem and holding on to staff?
It is, and government policy has influenced that. You know, the introduction of the ECCE scheme and schemes like AIM, which is providing additional support for children with extra needs in the childcare service, you know, they're only funded on a 38-week basis. So, you know, for us on the ground, we can only provide a 38-week contract for staff.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it doesn't allow for all the extras for us with the staff. It doesn't allow for us to provide staff with a pension. It doesn't allow for us to provide staff with paid maternity leave. There isn't enough room there for us, you know, oftentimes to provide sick leave for staff, to provide sick pay for them. And you know, for the staff themselves on the ground, you know, they don't know from year to year, do they have a job? They have a contract for 38 weeks. Will there be a job there for them again next year? So, you know, when they're living their own lives at home, they're applying for a mortgage, they're doing anything like that, the bank looks at it and says, no, you're on a 38-week contract. There's no way we could touch you for moving forward with a mortgage. You know, and it's affecting the staff's lives going forward. It's affecting whether they plan a family themselves. You know, can they afford to take maternity leave? Can they afford to go out sick? And that does all play on the minds of staff working on the ground.
And do you think then there's a problem we don't value the sector, that the government and the country doesn't value the sector enough? It doesn't.
It's a very mixed sector. And, you know, there's an awful lot of room to improve, I think. An awful lot of room to improve.
Yeah, yeah. And what do you think needs to be done then in terms of changes?
Well, I think that we do need to look at improving the pay scales of staff on the ground, that they have something to work for. That, you know, when staff aren't just going in at an entry level and staying at that entry level for 10, 12 years, that they have a goal. If they move on, they get qualified, that there's something for them to move towards. Like I myself, I was telling Dara this story just a while ago. You know, I was in a job for 12 years. And I went looking for something to an old pay slip, I was changing something on my mortgage.
Yeah.
And I came across a pay slip from when I was 18 and I was doing my degree in early ed. And I was working in Dublin Zoo at the time. A weekend job, part-time job.
Good training for working in a childcare setting.
Ever so slightly, yes. But here I was almost 20 years later, you know, three qualifications later, a mortgage later, two children later. I was actually on the same wage as I was when I was 18 years of age working my part-time job in Dublin Zoo.
That's shocking. That really is shocking. You know, And how do staff feel about that? Like, how does that make them feel in terms of?
It's very hard for staff. You know, it's very hard when you hear government want us to train up, government want us to gain all these qualifications, to move forward with additional training all the time. But what's there for staff at the end of it? You know, will we have a pension? At the moment, not necessarily. You know, we won't get a pay rise from it, maybe. There, you know, a lot of staff working on a 38-week contract, as I said. A lot of people are only on standard maternity benefit when they come out on maternity leave. So, you know, the terms and conditions for staff out there need to be improved. They really, really, really need to be worked on.
And finally, then, just in terms of planning the actual, you know, you're managing the centre, like, it must be very difficult then to try and plan and manage around staff and, you know, whether you're expanding or responding to needs and that.
Well, just this summer, some of my staff didn't come back in our after school service. So I had to advertise for new staff. I went through three rounds of advertising, and I didn't have one single person turn up for interview for those positions. So it is extremely difficult to recruit people. It's extremely difficult to find people at the moment.
Yeah, that obviously, Joe, just makes it, you know, now impossible to try and manage that service. Thanks so much for that. I think, you know, you've really highlighted some of the, you know, those really, again, I think they're shocking, you know, situations that people don't have access to maternity pay, sick pay, you know, pensions. Dara, what is the Big Start campaign proposing for what should be done now, and what's kind of the approach?
So I think there really is a need for a fundamental change of how the sector is structured. And what we have at the moment is a market system, right? Whether it's community or for profit, essentially it's a marketized system where they're all in competition with each other. And the problem is the government spends extra money, and that can do one of two things. It can improve quality and pay as a part of that. So you can put up the wages, or you can reduce fees. So that's another kind of big, important policy goal. Mm. Now, if you're running a service, Rory, you know, you can improve your quality and have all the bells and whistles and have good terms and conditions, but you're going to be a good bit more expensive than the place down the road. And we know that parents are, the biggest concern that parents have is the affordability issue, because it's just so expensive. It's such a burden on it. Mm. And that basically we have a competition between, not only between services, but also between that quality and affordability. That's where the tension is. And they shouldn't be in competition, right? There are two really important things that need to be driven along. So the kind of the big idea which SIPDU had, which we saw for a moment there, was that the state would take over the funding of the wages. So you'd still have the services in place, but you demarketize the sector, and that the wages are paid by the state. And that's the best way to get the investment in and get your bang for your buck. Because it would do two things. It would give you a mechanism to be able to improve paying conditions, which is great. That's really important. But it also takes around 70% of the outgoings of a service. It takes that off the shoulders of providers. Yeah. So all of a sudden, you have a huge amount of scope to be able to make it way more affordable. The fees could, you know, dramatically decrease as well. And so that gives the state the kind of safeguards it needs to be able to ensure that, right, when we're spending this taxpayers' money, that we make sure that it's spent effectively and that it actually delivers. And I think and we saw this, right? This isn't, magical land thinking. This is what happened with the wage subsidy scheme. We had this up and running for months. And what was impossible 12 months ago was a reality. And it's still kind of, and those kind of mechanisms are still in place now. And I think that really offered a glimpse of where we need to go with this and how we actually solve the problem.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree. I think, Dara, you're right in terms of this. Kind of it did show, you know, what was possible and kind of a way forward in terms of that, the wages being paid, and of course what that means then around, of course, the role of the state and the role of, you know, the department of both education, Department of Children, and I think it's Department of Social Protection might be playing a role as well. I know the department's names have all changed and amalgamated as well the last while, but the state broadly playing a role, of course, in quality and supporting quality, because I know that's a big issue as well. There's, on the one hand, the providers say we've been swamped with bureaucracy, all these things we have to do, and on the other hand, actually, where is the support for that? You know, even administrative development support that needs to go alongside this. Tanya Ward, to bring you back in from the Children's Rights Alliance, you had a milk attack there on your internet box. Don't apologize at all. This is the reality of working from home and children and the wonderful things they do to us. You were rudely interrupted by the milk. You were outlining kind of broadly the necessity, I suppose, and importance of early years to children, children in terms of addressing inequalities as well. Maybe you want to take that back up again.
Yeah, and so, you know, we have meta-narrative studies telling us basically, essentially, that you can predict where a child is going to end up, essentially, based on just their social emotional skills at the age of 3. And the thing is, it doesn't have to be this way. We have lots of examples where good quality early years education gives a child a chance to reach their full potential and to do as well as any other child. And we see this across Europe. The countries with the best outcomes for children have well-funded early years programs in place. But the crucial point, and this is really to pick up what Orla and Dara said, those countries generally have public programs. All the research points to public programs producing the best outcomes for children. And market-based systems like we have don't do that. And like one of the things that we are actually coming up against, you know, certainly in relation to the last budget, when we say to the politicians, invest in early years, what they're saying back to us is, we did invest. We didn't get a reduction in fees. We didn't get an increase in staff salaries. And so we're putting more money into a system and we're not seeing any return for it. So we have to crack that, because if we want our politicians to invest in early years, we have to try and crack that. And a very clear way to do that is to actually have a public system, particularly where the staff are paid directly by the state. That's the best way to guarantee they're going to have the best terms and conditions. And we have a model for that. It's not rocket science. We have primary school teachers, we have secondary school teachers that are paid in this way. And you can see the difference, actually, in terms of COVID. You know, early years education was in crisis because suddenly it couldn't open and the government had to subsidise it, put 65 million into it, keep the doors open. It didn't have to do that when it came to the education system, because it had been set up already and it was protected already. So they're the kind of things we need to be thinking about, and we really do need politicians to come in with some vision and ambition to resolve these issues, because if the starting point is we want the best outcomes for children, it's a public model that's going to deliver that.
Yeah, no, I think that's a really good point, that you know, it is the public model, it seems to be, you know, is the way forward, and how you transition towards that. Orla, in terms of the cost of that, and obviously there'll be arguments around, you know, can the state afford this, even though, as far as I was aware, there's already a commitment there that we would move to this model. Maybe I'm wrong about that, but that we know that the cost of investing in this, you know, would be huge in terms of, sorry, the return on investment, both socially, economically, to societal child development, and also to, you know, actually addressing poverty, addressing, you know, all areas of society, that this return is greater. But maybe you could you could address that.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose the sort of targets that people have been looking at is this 1% of GDP. But I think, and it follows from what Tanya was saying, like when we think of primary education, we don't have conversations about, oh my God, primary education is so expensive, why are we doing this? Yeah. No, we need it. We need it. So we don't get into all these debates about it being so expensive. We do have discussions about why parents are having to pay, you know, some part to primary ed, and why some of those costs have gone up as state investment hasn't been enough in certain circumstances. But there's an acceptance that we need it and we have to pay for it. So that's where we need to shift in terms of the discussion as well on childcare, and not always into the, oh, how much is it going to cost? Where are we going to get the money from? We need it and we have to get it. And yes, it has to come from taxation, because the models, you know, when Tanya was talking about, when you look at other countries, it comes from their general taxation. And they often have different models of taxation. than what we have in Ireland. So it does need to be looked at in that way, in the same way that we need to look at it in terms of other public services as well. But I also think, though, there is a fundamental piece, I think, which is part of, I think, one of the issues in terms of why our TDs or senators or politicians haven't moved in this way. And that is the concern about, you know, for many providers who have invested in terms of childcare buildings and, you know, who see it as a business, it is their business. And how do you shift from where we are now to there? And I think that's some of the problems that the previous minister, Minister Catherine Spohn, came up against. So we need a way of moving from one into the other. But what we clearly need, and the bit that you said, which is a pity it isn't there, but what we absolutely need is that there's a common agreement of where we're trying to move forward to, because that's absent at the moment. And then there's also the piece of, well, what about this sector who see it as a business? Now, for us in the Women's Council, childcare is not a business. It is, it needs to be seen as that essential public service, and we need to shift it out of that. But we do need to figure out a transition that gets us into that space. And I think that's where the sort of thought and the thinking needs to go into now. Not whether we should do it or not, but just how are we going to get there? I also think one of the other big problems with this is this probably will take us a bit of time, and it won't happen tomorrow. And one of the issues is that if it doesn't happen in an election cycle, then nobody wants to touch it in terms of a minister or the political parties. And we also need to get over that. We need to see this as, again, as a critical public service. We have to get to that point, and we need to start moving in that direction, you know, immediately.
Yeah, and I think that there is a, you know, I think I'm surprised. I understood that there was policy agreement. No, that this, that the public model is not what we're moving towards. No, that's not the case. So who is disagreeing with that?
Well, it's not government policy that it should be a public model. What the government have decided to do is to enter into this new period of consultation. And they also then, there's parallel work going on about how should childcare be funded. So no, I mean, it's very much in the space at the moment where it's not decided. What is positive, though, I think, and I mean, as I was saying, in terms of the Citizens' Assembly, also I think in civil society, there is a much greater coming together now under this, you know, where people are calling for this public model. And I think that's an important piece.
Yeah, yeah. No, and I think on that, maybe, Lynette, would you give your view? Do you think, you know, where should it go forward? Should we move to this public model where, you know, the state is funding the wages and, you know, there's different ways in which it can be worked out, but essentially you are moving towards that public model of early years and childcare?
As a community provider, yes, I think that is a space that we do need to move to. I can see arguments from the other side of the coin as well, from private providers. But it is something that we are going to have to and fro with, and we're going to have to work out. And it is, I think, for the best interest of the staff involved in the sector, and it's for the best interest of the children involved in the sector that we move towards this.
And what would you see as the big benefits to it, or the big positives for doing that?
There are huge positives for everybody involved. You know, for the staff involved, it would mean that, you know, like primary school and secondary school teachers, we would have a pay scale. We would have the defined role, we would have a defined place to move to. We, you know, we would have sick leave available to us. We would have maternity leave available to us. We would have contracts. We'd have jobs that were secure.
Yeah.
And wasn't just year to year. It gives staff the opportunity to have a life. As I said before, you know, that we can go for a mortgage, that, you know, we have security in our own families, and that we want to work in the sector, we want to stay in the sector, that we don't bleed staff into areas like special needs assistance in the schools, where they have all of these things in place and they're operating under similar qualifications as ourselves. And that's a real risk at the moment. You know, we are losing hundreds of staff to areas like this. And then for the children, it gives that security that I talked about earlier on. It means that the staff are there in place. They know the face that they're walking into every morning. The families know the faces that they're coming into every day. that we know the children, we know their background, we know their needs, we know their interests, we can build on those. We can put together a program that suits every individual child, every individual family, and we have the opportunity to work on that year to year, whether that be from the baby room into the toddler room, into our preschool rooms, and as they go through their two preschool years with Echi. And then we have a link with the schools that the same person who's seen that child grow all the way through can speak to the primary school teacher and let them know about the family and let them know about the child. And that child's education and their, you know, stability moves with them because we have all of those links and we have everything there with that.
Yeah, no, Lynette, I think that really captures it very well in terms of, you know, the need to move to that model. And, you know, you're right, it is going to be, you know, a period of change. And Orla said that as well. But I think it is a case. And Dara, you know, maybe you could comment on that last comment in terms of, you know, the transition, that really that's where the conversation should be moving to now. How do we make this transition to a public model?
Yeah, the sector's really at a crossroads, and we can see quite clearly, you know, where those two paths lead us to. And one is more towards a public service model where there's a career and there's a profession and there's a recognition of all those things that need to happen and the benefits of it all. And that's recognised by government with proper funding, and where you are able to bring the community and the private providers on that journey. We still need them to be there, absolutely. And that you're able to kind of deliver all those benefits that we've talked about that they can be delivered. The other path is more of a kind of a corporate childcare, where it's seen as quite a business orientated, or maybe a kind of a very profit driven approach. And we see what that looks like. You look to the US, you look to the UK, where all the small providers, medium-sized providers, they're disappearing. And basically you have four or five giant chains that have gobbled up everything. And they're incredibly entrenched now. The wages are at a poverty level, like in Ireland, really, really low. And they have really, really expensive, high costs for parents as well. And I think we're in Ireland now where we actually have the opportunity to go down one path or the other. You look at the UK and the US, and it's almost impossible to see how they'll be able to get out of the situation that they've allowed themselves to fall into. So, you know, it really is over the next, you know, 6 months, year, with this review of the funding model, and there's a load of other conversations that need to happen where the kind of fundamental questions are being asked and answered. And I think, you know, we really have to make our mark on it, that we make the right decisions, because, you know, it'll be another generation before we get the opportunity to have that kind of big conversation, set out the big vision for change.
And just finally, Dara, in terms of the campaign, where is the campaign going now, the Big Start campaign?
So we're out and we're organising workers, and that's about building that profession, that professional recognition as well. So it's very different during COVID, right? We're not having, there'll be no giant protests anytime soon. But it really is that kind of path to professional pay. And, you know, that'll be, you know, we're looking at within, you know, the next 6 to 12 months that we'll have that kind of historic first pay agreement where there's a proper pay scale, or the start of a pay scale being put in place, which recognises, right, the work that people are doing and the qualifications that people have.
And then maybe, Tanya, in terms of that, you know, obviously we've had, you know, as Dara mentioned, you know, the huge campaign that was, you know, the march, and I was on it, and I know, do you know what I mean? It was giant in terms of, you know, the size of a protest for the sector, and so many people were part of it. And we've, you know, it was a big issue in the election as well. And we know that, you know, the consensus, I think, definitely from civil society and, you know, amongst, I would, you know, think that, parents and providers, you know, providers definitely in terms of the workers anyway, is that we need to move to this public model. But how do you think we can move the political system and government and the state into actually implementing this?
I think we have to have a very clear vision of what it's going to look like, because whenever I talk about the public model to, you know, people in government, politicians and stakeholders, they all have a different view of what that looks like. So I think we have to have a, you know, a vision for what it would look like. And Norway gives us a really good example of what we might move to, because they were like us. They had a market-based system and they introduced a public program, and providers could opt in or opt out of it. And over time, the majority of providers opted into it. But what it does mean is you can't make a profit on it. It's certainly, it's moving towards, it's a profession, it's a public good, it's a public service, and your profits actually go back into the service. But I think one of the benefits of it, I mean, you'll hear from a lot of the providers, they can barely keep the doors open because of the cost of, you know, you have to comply with regulations and all these different things, but it means it does take you away from the front line and from working with children directly. And one of the ways to, for a lot of those providers to survive would be to move to a public model, because you might have a higher level of subsidisation for some providers than others. And even if you think about children in rural Ireland, like, we never really think about children in rural Ireland, and yet they have this, they should have the same right to early years education as any other child. So we should be looking at what kind of model we can put in place, because I think one of the challenges for a lot of children is that they're ending up with childminders, and actually some childminders have 2 and 3 degree qualifications or diplomas, but a lot of childminders don't have qualifications, and it does mean that those children may not be getting the same service and the same type of care. So what we're, if we don't deal with this, we're going to move towards, as Dara said, the US or the UK model, the smaller creches, which are better for children. They like to be in small family-based type places. They feel more comfortable there. They will fold, and you'll end up just having these very big corporate-based providers. And this opportunity to have something different, new, that's best for children, would be missed.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you. And I think that, that with all of you, that this is the opportune time now. This is the moment, and, you know, this turning point. It is like, you know, it feels similar in terms of housing and health. I think we're at a turning point for these key kind of public services or key areas of social issues that have been, you know, not properly addressed or have been handed over to the market. And that we really are at a turning point, I think. And the question is, how does it develop? And does it go down, as Dara said, that marketized, you know, model, and or we kind of just roll on as we are now in this kind of, you know, really unsatisfactory kind of midway place. You're never, you know, fully public and you're never fully private marketized, but it means, you know, I think the inequalities within it are much, much greater then, because you have those who can afford a better service, just like health, you know, get a better service, and the community services are left kind of starved and left trying to struggle on. And, you know, it worsens inequalities and, of course, is more expensive overall. Thank you so much, Lynette Monk from Kilbarrick Childcare, joining us today. Dara O'Connor from STIP2 Big Start Campaign. Tanya Ward from Children's Rights Alliance, and Orla O'Connor from the National Women's Council of Ireland, discussing the issue of childcare in early years. And I really hope this will add to the conversation, and, you know, people will listen to this and see that we need to keep this on as a really important issue in the political debate and the next election, whenever that is. But hopefully it will be sorted way before then, because it is vital for our kids and vital for the workers, that we develop a proper, I think, agree with you, public model. So as always, thank you for joining us, Reboot Republic. And to you listeners, you want to keep this going, become a patron, support us, go to tortoiseshack.ie, have a listen, check us out and become a patron, sign up to support us at patreon.com/tortoiseshack, and keep us on the road producing these podcasts that you love and listen to. Thank you very much.